Hard Drive DL is brought to you by Discover. Visit them at discover.com.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hello, friends. Paulie here from Hard Drive Radio, and I cannot put my excitement into words right now to have one of my favorite musicians in the studio with me today, and that would be the one and only Miles Kennedy. Man, thank you so much for being
here
today.
It's good to be here, man. It's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited. March 9th cannot come fast enough. That's when Year of the Tiger, your debut solo album, comes out. I want to talk about that because it's just been a long time coming, and I feel like this record has been, you know, teased and teased for probably almost 10 years at this point. So how, you know, when did you start working on this body of work that we get to hear?
Good question. The mysterious unicorn that was the first solo record, which is now not being released. I finished that in probably 2016. Now, mind you, I mean, I basically recorded that in 2009 and then just had some loose ends and then set it aside for years. Finished it up, then decided, okay, this isn't the record I want to put out. And so I started over in probably December of 2016, and I wrote for about 7 months and demoed things by around July of 17 last year. And so it was a pretty short window. I mean, it wasn't extremely short, but shorter, certainly shorter than the first one.
How is the material different for Year of the Tiger versus the material that you originally wrote?
Yeah. Well, I think that from a theme standpoint, it's certainly darker lyrically. And then musically, what I really wanted to do initially, which I feel like I hit the mark more on this record, there are elements of that on the first one, but then there are other elements that are a little more rock at times, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but I just wanted to make a very, like, I wanted to make sure I had a very realized vision when I put this out.
Talk about the theme and the motivation behind this record, because it's a very, very personal record for you.
Yeah, yeah. So it was basically what happened was I had this idea that had been sitting around for a little while, and it was this little melody with a lyric, and I didn't really know what the lyric meant. It just said, in the year of the tiger, I won't weep and moan. And I liked the way it sang, but I didn't know what the year of the tiger was. So I did some research and looked it up on the old interweb and discovered that Year of the Tiger was the year that my father passed away, and when I was a kid. And he passed away when I was 4 years old. And so that was a pretty heavy, heavy thing for me as a child, and something I always wanted to dissect as a writer. But could never quite man up and do it. And I felt like this was the universe telling me, look, here's this idea. The universe has dropped on me one day while I was, strangely enough, mowing my freaking lawn. I was mowing my lawn and stopped, you know, I turn off the blade and like hum this melody into my phone and just kind of set it aside. So it was really one of those just very strange situations as a writer. And it was a heavy record to write, and it was cathartic. I'm glad I went through the process, but it certainly was not a walk in the park.
I can only imagine. I love those serendipitous moments where things just kind of fall into place, and it almost seems like, you know, divine inspiration,
right?
You know, your muse tapping you on the shoulder and going, hey, how about this, huh?
I know, right? That's kind of what it felt like. There are moments as a songwriter where you really don't know where something comes from. And then your fear is always like, well, is that something I heard in a, you know, one day walking down the street? That's because you just don't know where it comes from. But you go with it and you just take it as a gift from the universe.
So when you were recording and you're kind of, you know, digging into these past emotions and these past feelings, did you kind of like have to do it in shifts? Like, did you have to take breaks, or did you just kind of plow through and just go, go, go?
I've tried my best to plow through as much as I could. But I generally, as a writer, feel like taking breaks to gain perspective is really important, and it's always in stages I do things. So generally I'll come up with the guitar part and the melody first, and step away from that and listen to it with fresh ears and go, is that good? Okay, that's good. I like that. Listen, getting some time. And then I start building the lyric, adding lyric, and get some perspective with that. And it's all about it. Really, time is really important as a creative person to so I can come back and look at it or listen to it with fresh ears. I think that's really helpful.
So you're writing these songs, you get, you know, you put it down like maybe a guitar part or three. Right. You know, there's definitely parts in the record that we hear where you're harmonizing with yourself. You know, how much of that is done in the demo stage and how much of that is done when you're actually recording?
Well, with the demos, this time I intentionally kept it very, very simple. You know, I think that was one of the mistakes I made on the first record because I demoed some of those songs extensively to the point where I actually, with some songs, got so attached to the demo version that when we actually made the record, it was a challenge. So with this record, I told myself, okay, no demoing where you go in and you use, you know, Easy Drummer or whatever, and you program drum parts, and you have this whole elaborate production on your laptop. This time it was going to be just acoustic guitar and the voice. And if the song stands on its own, then you know it's good enough to start building everything around it with other, you know, other instruments. And so that was how I demoed this.
So where did the actual recording take place?
With Michael Basquette down in Florida, down in Orlando at his studio, who, as you may know, I've done a lot of work with throughout my career. We started way back in the Mayfield 4 days. We did. He was the engineer on the second Mayfield 4 record in probably 2000, I think we made that record. Crazy. So we've had almost a 20-year, rock and roll relationship. It was a lot of fun. For such a dark record, he knew how to keep it light so that I didn't kind of get lost in my head throughout the process. And there was a lot of comic relief on his end, which was important.
What kind of stuff would he do, like crack jokes?
He's a goofball, man. There was this thing everybody in the studio started doing where they were like a general, like a Southern, I'm the general. And you would talk in this general voice so much so that people just stopped talking in their own voices. Well, son, that was a great take. The general says you can come out of the booth now. And before you know it, people started losing their voices because it's kind of hard on your voice. And I thought about it, maybe I should just sing that way on the record, you know, in the year of the tiger, I won't weep and moan.
That would be amazing. I definitely feel like you need to do like just a one-off show where you just completely go bonkers and do it
any day now.
Come out in like the KFC Colonel
exactly.
outfit.
Exactly. Maybe I'll do that. I need to figure out like a visual angle for this tour where it's like, you know, I'll come out as the KFC guy.
So all the instrumentation that's played on the record that we get to hear, is that all you're playing?
The drums and the bass are not me. So the drums were my old friend, Zia Udin, who played, who's my drummer friend and brother for the last, I'm dating myself now, but it's been like almost 30 years on and off of playing together in bands. And, you know, he was in the Mayfield 4 and my high school band that we were in together. I keep saying our band together in Bittersweet. We used to play clubs together as kids. You know, we'd play at night, 6 nights a week, 4 hours, 5 hours a night, and then get up and go to school the next day. And we really kind of cut our teeth together. Coming up as youngsters. And then Tim Tournier played bass, who did an awesome job, who also manages me in Alter Bridge. He's kind of a true Renaissance man. Most everything else. And now Elvis he had some great ideas with Mellotron parts for the record, which I've failed to mention a number of times in interviews. I feel bad. But other than that, the mandolin and the guitars and the lap steel and the banjo and all that stuff was I did.
Excellent. Any other guests on this album that you brought in?
I did bring in some members of the Parallax Orchestra, who we did a gig with at the Royal Albert Hall in London. And on the second track, which is kind of an epic track, in the middle section, there's this build, and I felt like it really needed something. And I remember when I wrote it, I was like, you can almost hear like really heavy guitars building this part up. But I was like, I can't rely on that on this record. I've got to change this and what's going to work. Strings would work. somebody who actually knows how to play real, like legit, you know, strings, like a string section. So I was lucky enough to get some of them to add some of their magic to the song.
I want to get into some of the details for the title track, Year of the Tiger. And first, I want to ask about, you know, the bass line in that song, because mm-hmm. it's very pronounced. And at first, I was like, what is that? Because it's like, okay, that's, you know, could be an acoustic bass guitar. But honestly, for half a second, I thought it was like a wash tub, like kind of a thing, because it's really heavy.
Yeah.
Washed. What was that? Like, is it
the doom? Yeah, doom, yeah. Doom. It's a stand-up bass.
Okay. It is
doom, 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 ba doom, doom. Yeah, and we experimented for a while with that part because, and that was the interesting thing about putting this together. You kind of had to experiment with the parts because I didn't want things to sound too just straight up country. You know, it's like boom, bump, boom, bump, boom. Bump. I didn't want that. So, but it's kind of quirky and hypnotic, and that's what I really love about that bass part is that it just kind of draws you in. It's kind of a big hook in the song.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it's when I first heard it for the first time, it's the thing that immediately jumped out as soon as it hits you.
That's awesome.
So that kind of like got its hooks into me, and then the rest of the song is, you know, it's a beautiful song. It's a great song.
Thank you.
It's a powerful video too. Tell us a little bit about shooting that.
Yeah, that was something that it turned out. I was really happy with how that turned out. And once again, hats off to Tim who came up with that whole concept. We actually shot that video when we were on tour in Europe on a day off. And it tells a story of, you know, more or less it touches on the idea of a parent leaving. And there's a scene where they're holding hands and then it breaks apart. And it totally gives you the feels. You know, and then you see this kid with this guitar at a certain point, and then I have the guitar the entire time, and so that I think it's alluding to the fact that I'm the kid. So yeah, it's pretty heavy.
That's exactly how I saw it. Where'd you guys find the kid though? Just like pick him up on the side of the road.
Yeah, we're just like, hey kid, you want a gig? No, actually, it was the if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the van, the guy who drove the van. Yeah, it was the guy who drove the van to get us to the destination, and then we were like, we need to find a child and a father part, and he's like, he said he'd do it, and it worked out perfect. So I hope we'll double check on that, but I think that's how that played out.
The other song that I've heard from this album so far that everyone has heard is "Haunted by Design." Tell me a little bit about what went into writing that one.
A lot of coffee, honestly. True story. So I got up one Saturday, I think it was a Saturday morning, and I was going through a period where I was drinking a lot of coffee that was caffeinated. Now I've since been cut off. Everyone around me has cut me off. I no longer am allowed the caffeine. But what was interesting was I was all jacked on the coffee and needed to calm down. So I picked up this guitar and that finger that part came out. That, you know, dun, 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 dun. And to me, it was very Mississippi John Hurt, who I'm a massive. It's interesting because Mississippi John Hurt is somebody that I listen to when I get a little anxious. Something about his guitar playing and the sound, really the sound of his voice, it's amazing. And it calms me down. It makes me feel really good and centered. And so that's part of the reason I started playing that pattern. I thought it would kind of, you know, bring me back to earth. And then I spent some time focused on the melody. That was another tricky one though, because if you heard the very first version of that, it was full on country. Like it was totally like, and what was the solo part was actually the chorus, and which was really kind of happy sounding, and I knew that was the wrong way to go. So I had to massage that song and make it darker, where it was like it was still compelling and had a certain feel and it kind of moved you, but it was also kind of eerie. So that was a real fun song in the end. It's probably my favorite song on the record.
As an aside here, I do want to mention that there are a couple, and by literal a couple, I mean two, track-by-track videos that are out on your YouTube channel right now talking about the two songs. And I watched the one for Haunted by Design, and you mentioned, you know, Mississippi John Hurt.
Yeah.
And I had never even heard of him before, so I was like, oh, who's this guy? So I go up and I look at him. And so I was delighted by that because I got a little bit of an education in music for an artist that I had never heard of before. So thank you for that.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
You heard of him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. He was, I mean, it's crazy with him. It's, it sound, to me, it sounded like there's two guitar players, but it's just him. Yeah, he was ferociously good. Yeah.
Can you maybe just like off the top of your head name drop maybe one or two other blues guitarists who you kind of really draw inspiration from?
Sure, yeah. But the big one, I don't know if he's strictly, I don't even know how to categorize this artist, and he passed away about 10 years ago. Though he was known for playing a resonator, which I utilized on this record, because of my love for him and how much he influenced me, and just the sound of the instrument. I just love the sound of the instrument. But his name was Chris Whitley, and I don't even know if I could categorize him as strictly a blues guy. He had elements of blues, but he had elements of, I don't even know how, that's the genius of Chris Whitley. It was just a number of things that were just so cool and just an amazing songwriter and had a beautiful voice. And so that was a real important one for me. Another one who's definitely has a history in the blues, but could do everything was Jimmy Page, or is Jimmy Page. And Jimmy was a big inspiration on the kind of guitar playing I brought to this record, because of all the altered tunings. So I'd say those are three of the bigger ones who influenced me on this record.
I'm glad you mentioned Jimmy Page, because I want to get back to him in a little
sure.
bit. But first, I do want to talk about one more song that I got to hear for the first time, and you played for us in our acoustic studio. It was Devil on the Wall.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah. So that one, lyrically, is very similar to what Haunted by Design deals with. And it's really a fast forward to now. And kind of dealing with certain anxieties that I think ultimately stem from losing my dad at a young age. So it kind of dissects some of that. And what's interesting about that track, if you heard the acoustic version, but when you hear the actual album version, you're going to be surprised, because it turned out to be a rockabilly song. I mean, it's full on rockabilly with a guitar solo that's basically like Brian Setzer inspired. And so that was something I'd never done before, and it was a lot of fun. But at one point I was like, man, is this too rock, or you know, rock fans gonna hear this, go, what in the hell? what is this? But that's part of what was exciting about a lot of moments on this record, is it was an opportunity to do something that I just had never done, and why not? You know, it's a solo record. It should sound different than other things. I didn't want to make a record that just sounded like, you know, Alter Bridge or things I'd done with Slash. And although there are moments when you hear and you go, oh, I can hear a little bit of this there and whatnot, but overall I try to do something a little different.
I mean, I think that's the thing I really like about solo records, is especially for an artist as distinctive as yourself, where, you know, as soon as I hear your voice, I know it's you. There's nobody else that sounds like you. But to kind of hear these songs in a frame of reference, like, I love Alter Bridge, I'm a huge fan, I love the band, but to hear you doing something so much different than that sound, for me, is, you know, it's a treat, and it's expanding my musical horizon.
Oh, cool.
You know, like,
that's great to hear.
When I was a kid, you know, people ask me, what music you listen to? Like, heavy metal, nothing else.
Right.
Everything else sucks. Country music is garbage.
Right.
You know? And now, like, you know, I'm in my mid-30s, and I'm like, that was so stupid of me. Why shut out, you know, so much good music based on, like, you know, this perception that you can only listen to one type of music? So,
hey, man, somebody, I used to do this. I know most people who are passionate music fans go through that. You know, it's like you become so loyal, and you're part of that tribe, and there's nothing wrong with that. But then you wake up one day and you realize, look, every morning when I get up, I really love sushi, but I don't eat sushi every single day, because there's so many great, you know, choices in the world. And it's the same. I found it to be the same thing as you found, that there's so many different genres that are, you know, as long as you're getting the goosebumps or you're getting the feels or whatever it is, the music's all good, you know?
Yeah. As long as it speaks to you,
that's right.
That's what it does for me. Now touring for this record is probably going to be a lot different than, you know, a lot of the things that people usually have seen you on Alter Bridge touring with Slash, large production, big sound. I don't know if you guys, you know, I see the dates are out there. I don't know how much you've gone into pre-production for the tour yet. Do you know what you're bringing on the road with you? Do you know how much or how little gear you want to bring with you?
Yeah, I'm think it's going to be pretty lean. I think something that I've always wanted to do, and frankly, it was something I wanted to do when I initially recorded that first solo record, was be able to take the songs and just go up there with an acoustic guitar, like, you know, I did earlier, and keep it really simple and about the songs and about the vocal and about, you know, maybe tell stories about the songs and, you know, have a certain, I want it to feel intimate. You know, I don't want to play real big venues. I want to make it like it's a big living room and, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do. And it's a little nerve wracking. I feel it's going to feel a little naked up there without a band to, you know, play with me, but I'm hoping to do a band version later on this year, but for now, first run will be just me.
So it's strictly going to be just you and a guitar?
Just me and some guitars, yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, right? Now I'm nervous when you put it like that. I'm terrified.
No, you know what? Because I feel like with the audience that's going to show up to that show, it's going to be a bunch of people who just want to see you do something great. It's so like no one's going to be in that audience waiting for you to screw up.
Well, you might be surprised. Kennedy, you suck. Where's your band? You're talking like the general.
You know what? Security, throw that guy out. It's strictly going to be songs from this album for this tour?
It's going to be a mixture. This is another thing that's going to be really fun is I'm going to take the last 20 years and do kind of a retrospective. And I don't know how I'm going to pace it yet, but I'm going to take some Mayfield songs and some Alter Bridge songs and some maybe a few things from what I've done with Slash and Conspirators, and then a fair amount from this record, and just, you know, have fun with it. I feel like, and that's been something that I've really enjoyed at rehearsing for this, is it's made me realize how lucky I've been to have kind of accumulated X amount of songs over the years as an artist to put together a set like this. So it should be fun.
You mentioned Jimmy Page earlier, and I would be remiss to ask, you know, I've read many times that you wrote some songs with the guys in Zeppelin. What happened to those songs? Will anyone ever get to hear them?
Well, to set the record straight, I did get to jam with them, which was amazing. And I did jam over some, or did get to basically sing over the top of some riff ideas that they had. But they weren't like full, it's not like we actually recorded songs. And I don't really look at like we wrote songs together. I look at it more like they had this genesis of a really awesome song or two. And I remember they basically were like, hey, you know, do you want to sing over the top of this? Just do your thing. And I was like, well, hell yeah. I mean, and for me, that was the highlight of the entire experience, being that I'm such a fan of the band, to have the guys who basically wrote the blueprint for what I do and so many of us do, you know, allow you into their world and say, hey, you know, we've got this thing we're working on. We want you to paint on the canvas with us with what you do. And that was pretty heavy. Maybe the heaviest thing I'll ever do. You know, so
I can imagine that was probably a very intimidating moment.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, the whole thing was a little intimidating. I mean, I wish I'd have kind of taken more of it in and not kind of try to forget what was actually happening so that I could have enjoyed more of it and not been so, you know, not that I was uptight. And I think after a few days, I definitely, if it felt more, things were kind of calming down, settling in. But look, it was just a once in a lifetime experience, you know.
To have been a fly on that wall, man, that would have been cool. So between, you know, your solo work and Alter Bridge and Slash, all the touring that you do, how do you, you know, make sure to get a little time for yourself? How do you find some time to take off and just be with your family and, you know, how does that work? Because it seems like you're always working.
It's a good question. You know, I mean, I do have time at home here and there, and you know, it's great to be with my wife and the two dogs and just kind of hang out and try and power down. I'll be perfectly honest with you. It's kind of, the hard part about it is, it's not that I go stir crazy. It's that when I stop, it's like then I kind of start going, like my brain starts doing weird things. You know, you start obsessing about things and being kind of silly. And that's, I think it's part of the reason that I work as much as I do, is because I just feel very fulfilled making music and hopefully making people happy. And we all kind of come together you know, unify every night under the banner of music, you know, and so I think that makes me just feel feel alive and feel whole. Now, with that said, do I get exhausted? Hell yeah. I mean, they're you know, I get, sure. I mean, it's not always the easy. It's not always easy. Traveling is not always easy. But I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, well, I'm going to have to travel and I have to get in the airplane and get on. Do you know how, I mean, imagine being like, the way they used to do it back, you know, 60 years ago, touring was way different. Everybody would pack on a bus that where there was no bunks and like we've got it good. It's you know, we have TVs in our heck, we have everybody has a little TV in their own bunk. So I'm, you know, look, we're spoiled. Spoiled rotten.
Talking about, you know, happiness and uniting under the banner of music. Can you tell me a little bit about your work with the Future Song Foundation?
Yeah. Yeah. Future Song Foundation was something that my wife and I discussed doing years ago. We wanted to do a foundation for to make sure that kids who wanted to play music could play music. And then we found some like-minded folks who lived in Spokane, where we live, who were all about the same cause. So we joined forces and started this foundation a few years ago. And it's been great. You know, I put on a benefit for them for it a while ago. We've done a few now. One was in Spokane, and we actually did two in London. When we did the Royal Opera Hall gig with the symphony, we were able to give some of those proceeds to some organizations in the London area. And we've been doing some fun stuff at home. Recently we were able to give some guitars to some kids who needed it. And that was fun watching that, you know, just seeing the expression on their face, cause they had no idea what was coming. Building the music room at one organization, for the kids. So anyways, yeah, if you want to check that out, it's a futuresong.org and it's, yeah, it's a cause that we really believe in.
I mean, I think it's definitely a good one. Anybody's life can be enhanced through music, but to get them at an early age,
yeah.
And you know, that's one of the things that I always kind of like look back and regret, that I never honestly learned to play an instrument as a kid, and now as an adult, I feel like, oh, I don't have time or anything like that. Like, I wish I did. So
it's always time.
Get them while they're young.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So the tour plans so far, you've got some, you know, your Europe dates. You're coming back to the U.S. I see you got some dates in South Africa.
Yeah, we start the tour in South Africa.
Have you ever played South Africa before?
I have. About 5 years ago, and it was one of the best experiences ever. It was really great. So I'm pretty stoked to get back there.
I mean, I've never been down there. Like, what's the music culture like down there? What's the crowd like there at a show?
They're great. They're really great, and they're really, you know, I went there with the Kings of Chaos. I don't know, probably 5 years ago, and the crowd was wonderful. Just, you know, learned so much about people down there. And the other thing, speaking of music, which was really wonderful for me, was getting to hear some of the music that's from that area. And that was heavy. I mean, not like heavy as in metal heavy, but as in like emotionally heavy, hearing folks sing, you know, some of their traditional songs. And wow, it was something I'll never forget. And then we also got to do a lot of really cool things, which we're hoping to do again. You know, there was like safaris and went to my wife and I and a few other people. We went to cage. Did the cage dive thing with Great White Sharks. Which was crazy. I'm trying to think who else was on that. Maybe Joe Elliott went on that with us, or maybe Glenn Hughes. And I can't remember for sure, but I know there were a few of us, and it was one of those experiences that we'll never forget. Actually, I don't know if Joe did that or not, so don't quote me on that. But anyways, I'm going off on a tangent like I always do. But it was, if you ever want to, you know, hang out with Great White Sharks, go down to Shark Alley there in South Africa.
How much time do you get on tour to like kind of go off and do random things like that? Because I imagine the schedule's pretty tight.
Yeah, it's pretty tight. Not very often at all. And that was rare because we have two shows, I think, that were spread out over maybe a week, maybe not that much, but it made it so that there were plenty of off time. And but that's rare. Yeah, I wish I could say, yeah, when you're on the road, you know, you do a show one day and then the next day you're off, you know, in the Andes Mountains. It's not that way. It's really just getting from point A to point B, and that's how we do it.
When you travel, do you do you take notes of things you want to come back and see, and then do you actually follow through on that?
No, not really. No, I'm actually become kind of a, if anything, I'm just a hotel connoisseur. I can tell you just about anything about any hotel at any place in the world. Who has the best towels?
Who, does
who doesn't
the
change
towel?
Their sheets? Who has the best towels? That's actually a good question. I lied. I don't know who has the best towels. Once I actually was in a Hard Rock hotel, casino somewhere. I forget where. I was somewhere in the Midwest. And I loved, they had these bathrobes. And I was like, it was the most comfortable, awesome bathroom. And I remember mentioning it in the elevator as the security guy was taking us back up to his room. Or up to my room. That sounded very odd. Anyways, they let us keep the nice robes. So I, yeah. Anyways,
I do imagine like there are maybe some fans who like see you out in the wild and they're like, hey man, what's up? You want to come back to my house?
Yeah, come back to my house, bro. The general wants to see.
Yeah, come on over here, boy. I'll show you something.
No, not much. I think most people are just afraid of us. They think we're a bunch of goons, so nobody invites us back to their house.
Well, if they listen to this interview, they'll see that reality shattered. Right. You're always a pleasure to talk to. Before I let you go, is there anything you'd like to say to your fans who are eagerly anticipating the release of this record?
Oh, man. Well, first and foremost is just thanks for your patience, because I know that this has been a ridiculously long wait. And most people, I think, were starting to think that it wasn't going to happen. So I'm just really, I feel very grateful that you all A, waited, and B, you know, I know this is a very different, what you've heard so far is very different, and I really appreciate you, at least listening to it and giving it a chance. It means a lot to me, and it was just something I needed to do for me. And hopefully if you're into it and want to come check it out or, you know, listen to the record, I would love that. So thank you. Thanks for your continued support. I appreciate it.
The album is Year of the Tiger. It arrives March 9th. Pre-orders are available now. Miles Kennedy, thank you so much for this conversation.
Pleasure.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.